when it comes to sex, like, the boys don't know what to do. They have a, she's like, I was like, they're just gonna like be there. She's like, they're gonna have a boner. And I'm like, yes, the boys are gonna have a boner and they're gonna know that they wanna put that in there and they don't really know what to do.
Oh my God.
Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again.
I'm Gina Tremarco, sales trainer and consultant at Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv.
And I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey, and loan officer with U.S. Mortgage.
Singing Linda. You're looking fabulous today.
Thanks.
Speaking of looking fabulous, what? You're looking more fabulous than I am, I'll tell you that. We have our days. We have our days, right? Me, roll out of bed look. I'm speaking of fabulous, let's not forget Dermavogue and Dr. James Turek for making us fabulous looking and feeling. I'll put this out there because I'm so transparent. I got my second dose of BioT yesterday.
Yeah, she texts me. She's like, can't go to the gym. I got a, what did you say? I have like a pellet in my butt. And I'm like, whoa.
I got a pellet TMI. In my ass. The pellet in my cheek. Pellet, it's in my left cheek. And you're not supposed to like, he's like, don't do any squats. I'm like, oh. I've actually been really good with going to the gym 5 days a week. And now I'm like, I can't go. I can't even walk. They're like, we advise you don't do it because it can, like, it can pop out.
Needs 24 hours. Now, to be clear, people, this pellet in her butt that we're talking about, you can go back and find Dr. Turek's episode where we discussed, but it is a hormone treatment basically that keeps Gina from killing us all, I think. It's kind of basically.
That's it in a nutshell. Pretty and much. you can feel the difference. I can. You can feel the difference. You do it every like 3.5 to 4 months. This just gets your hormones in balance. This is going to sound crazy. I had no testosterone left in my body, which you still need. You need all of it. But like the lack of testosterone was not helping me be a woman your mother warned you about because I was like crying at everything. A leaf would fall. I would cry. I'm like, what the hell is going on?
Mm.
So this like balances you, gives you energy, helps you sleep, supposedly helps you lose weight. He says, I look thinner. I don't know. All I know is I feel better. And to your point, I'm not killing anybody. So
we love that.
Speaking of not killing anybody, today we decided to talk about having difficult conversations because it is possible to almost kill somebody in a difficult conversation.
Yeah.
And you and I have been there, and I thought this was such a good topical thing because this someone also had asked us how we get along so well. And it's like, well, we have our moments where
indeed.
We don't.
Indeed, indeed.
We're imperfect. So I think it's important to shed light on that too, that as jovial and great as we are, we don't always have great moments together. And that relates to, you know, that happens in business. That happens with spouses. That happens with children. So here we are, difficult conversations.
Yes. And I have, it's so interesting that you selected this topic, Gina, because working in mortgage, and as you guys, if you've been following our show from the very beginning, I've worked in real estate on the sales side for 10 years or so, and then moved over to the mortgage side. And that is the number one main thing that I've noticed about being on this side of sales in mortgage is that I have to have a lot more difficult conversations. And I have said numerous times in the last couple of months, I'm getting pretty good at having difficult conversations. Because when you're out looking at houses with your realtor, it's a lot of fun. And you're like, oh my gosh, I love this house. And maybe it's pushing my budget a little bit. Let me go talk to my lender. And then I'm the one that has to say, yes, your credit is not quite where it needs to be. And your income and your debt to income ratio are not where it needs to be for you to purchase that house at this time. And I have, you know, I'm the type of person that with these difficult conversations, I'd rather just immediately get it out there in the open. Because I know that having been on the real estate sales side, I don't want to send a borrower out there with a realtor looking at homes if I don't believe that they can get their loan closed. And I don't want to, I don't want a realtor to be out there wasting their time with somebody who thinks they can afford $200,000 worth of house when they really can only afford $150,000. And it's like dashing people's dreams, and it's not fun to do. And I also know that it's the right thing to do for all parties involved to immediately just rip the Band-Aid off. And whew, I've had some doozies, but I usually just turn it around. And I think we'll get into this is how to take a difficult conversation, lay out what the problem is, and then search for solutions and say, hey, you know, you don't qualify right now because of this and this, and this is what I think you should do. And the end goal is to get you into the home you want. And these are the steps we need to take.
Yeah. What has been successful for you so far? Because you have been doing this and you see this happen. Has anything stuck out for you that is like, okay, I need to do these three things, and that helps me in the conversation?
The number one thing that I have found that helps me is to do it immediately. The minute I find out there's something wrong in a file that's not going to get the person to where they want to be, I immediately call them or reach out to them and say, hey, is it a good time to talk? And that's the second thing is it a good time to talk? If I'm going to call someone and deliver bad news, if you will, or something difficult for them to hear that they may not want to hear, I want to find out, are you in the middle of your workday? Are you in the middle of putting your kids to bed? Like, I want to find out, hey, will you please let me know what a good time to talk is? So, you know, do it as soon as you can. Make sure that it's a good time. And also, I try to make sure that I have a solution, not just, sorry, can't help you. Because I know people run into that. I know when you were working with me on purchasing a home, you ran into that. People are like, nope, sorry, you don't qualify.
I was pre-qualified.
Right. And that's one thing that happens a lot in mortgage. And here's just a lesson outside of the whole box of the realm of what we're talking about in home buying. There's a lot of lenders out there that'll just throw a pre-qual at you if they see your credit score and what you say you make monthly. When I look at a file, and that's one reason I love US Mortgage so much, and my branch manager, Mike Fitzpatrick, shout out to him, is that we are hesitant to give you a pre-qualification until we see your documentation supporting what you're saying you make. Because anybody can walk up to me and say, hey, I got a 720 credit score and I make $3,000 a month or $5,000 a month. And if I pull the credit and see that, yeah, you do have a 720, I don't know necessarily if you make that or if you only just started making that in the last 2 months. You know, there's a lot more to it than people know. So it's better to dig in deep to really understand because, you know, it's a lot better to know that up front than to find the house you love, be under contract for 3 weeks, and then suddenly find out that you get kicked out because that happens pretty often. It happens often, and it doesn't need to if you do your due diligence. And if someone like myself is willing to really peel back the layers of the onion a little bit and also have the difficult conversation if there's issues with your file.
You know, I think, you know, when we call it difficult conversations, part of the difficult is that we have to share something that might not be the best news with someone, or we share something that forces people to look at things that they're not comfortable about themselves. It's being drawn out or how people perceive you.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know what I mean? Like there's... The difficult part is if you know it's going to be a difficult conversation, then I think you're halfway there. You're halfway there because you know, if you know it's difficult, it's going to be difficult, then you understand that person enough to know that they're going to have some level of pushback. So I think walking into it with that mindset of like, this is going to be difficult, and then going, why is it going to be difficult before I even have this conversation? Like anticipate why they're going to be uncomfortable.
Well, and also anticipate a lot of times when people get mad, because that's one thing we're worried about. Oh, I don't want them to get mad at me. And to know and understand that when someone gets mad, it's not necessarily that they're mad at you. They might actually, like, in just keeping it relating to what I am experiencing in the mortgage business, when somebody gets mad, if they get mad at me because they don't qualify for the amount that they're looking for to purchase, it's not my fault. It's actually their fault because of their choices and behavior, whatever they spent money on and created debt. You know, they were late in payments. They had something go to collections. They, you know, a lot of it is their own choices. So they might get mad because they can't get what they want. And they might yell at me. And I'm just very, very aware that it's actually more helpful to allow them to get mad and vent and just be quiet and let them vent and understand that it's really not actually about me.
Yeah. So there's so much emotional intelligence. You know, I'm always talking about this is required on both ends. So if you're the deliverer of a message in a difficult conversation, if you're not emotionally intelligent enough to realize it's not about you, you're going to have a problem. If you're the person receiving the information, although I've been in that place of receiving, but my head is in a different place, but I'm probably more emotionally intelligent than a lot of people because I spend so much time in that arena. But even receiving the information, you have to be able to identify your own triggers. Okay, they're giving me this information. Why are they giving me this information? Sometimes people deliver difficult, you know, messages that are their own. It's their own shit, and they're coming to you. And the reason why I say this, because this was something recent that happened to me without going into too many details. A friend came to me. She wanted to share some information with me. She set it up in a way. I thought she set it up well because they talk about, and we have some tips from a couple articles of, like, you know, speak in a private setting, find a place to sit down and have a conversation, you know, try to do it in person or eye to eye, something like that. Like, don't do it in an email, don't do it in a phone call. Well, she came to me and said, I really want to talk to you. I need to talk to you. So I didn't have my guard up. I just thought she needed my help. So my guard was definitely down. And she's like, well, I don't want to do it while we're out. You know, when we go out, you know, we hang out, we go to the local bar in the area. She's like, I don't want to do it like when we've had a couple drinks. So I want to come over and talk to you. And I said, okay. So she came over at like at 8 a.m. on a Sunday. Now I go to church every Sunday. So it was like right before I was going to church. So she sits down and she tells me something that is extremely disturbing and sends me, I haven't even shared this with you, Rachel, because I've been like reeling from it and I actually needed to actually go into therapy for it. Swear to God, I had to process this in therapy, the information she shared with me. And it was secondhand information. So a friend of a friend told her XYZ, and so she was coming to tell me XYZ, and it was something that was going to really impact my life in a really scary way. But it was like secondhand information, but I was so caught off guard and vulnerable in the moment that I was like, oh my God, okay. And the information she gave me involved somebody else as well.
Telephone game.
Yep. And it was information she was giving me about me, but was really about someone else, but was going to affect me. Okay. Everybody with me? So I'm reeling from it. I then go and talk to this other person because someone else advised me, you probably should have a conversation with that person because that person's being talked about. So I go talk to that person, which of course creates this like huge outburst of anger. And why did I not stop such a rumor? Why am I propagating it? Why? Like, then that person was really angry. And I'm like, hey, I'm in the middle here. I'm being affected by it. You're being affected by it. I didn't know whether or not I should tell you. And I had even called and said, hey, can you come over like she did to me? Because I want to have this conversation with you. And of course, this had all this pushback. And I said, all right, well, you give me no choice but to do it over the phone. And I don't want to do this over the phone because it was intense stuff. Did it over the phone. And that's where the blow up happened. And it's a long story, right? So
can't wait to hear the real details off.
I know. Exactly. Because I do not want to propagate
things. No, for sure.
You know, so
We've all been in that situation, though, where you hear something and you are furious or upset or whatever emotion. And you want to talk about it. You don't want to talk about it. But, you know, it's good to approach it.
And there was so much involved in all of the emotions on all ends, because there are emotions on my part of like how supposedly this person did something that was going to affect me. And then on that person's side, they're like, I can't believe you would actually believe that and support that. And who said this? And I want backup. And I was like, I can't tell you who said it, but someone said it, who said it. Like, and as I was saying it, I was like, listen to me. Like, I literally took someone's telephone game without backup and disturbed someone else's life. So that person that I delivered it to then approached she, we'll leave it gender unspecific.
They
approached the person who delivered the message to, well, actually had guessed who delivered it. And I never confirmed it. It was just like, so did so-and-so say that? And I just didn't say a word. Yeah, I kind of thought it would be from that person. And I was like, oh, shit. So they approached her without me around and had a conversation. Like, next time you have something to share, come directly to me.
Yeah, the dangerous game of telephone.
Ooh. Well, now what happened was I was put in the middle and both of them are mad at me. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Y'all should have just got together in the first place. Thank you for sharing with me and putting me in the middle. And that's kind of a long story, but it's you have to be, you know, if you're going to share information that's difficult, have your shit together.
Yeah.
Have your facts together. Don't create this like world that's going to now create even. So now I feel like I've been put in a situation because one of them is not talking to me at all. The other one, every time they talk to me, brings it up and gets pissed off. And so I now feel like I'm stuck in the middle of the mediator. I'm like, I guess I got to go call her and be like, okay, don't be mad at me. I didn't expose you.
Well, here's where, Gina, your improv skills can be applied to life, and everybody can learn from, you know, Gina is always, I've told Gina umpteen times that the yes and exercise is the most valuable business exercise that you can ever find. And if you need more information on that, you can probably go to either one of Gina's websites and find out more. But really, in situations like that, and most situations where, especially like if as you were describing, Gina, when you were sitting there receiving this information, whether it's good information, bad information, to just yes and it and be open to, okay, unexpected, and what are the next steps and who do I need to talk to next and what's going to happen and let's see what happens and just rolling with it. Because if people are still angry right now about it, it doesn't mean that they still will be in another 2 weeks once they've cooled down a little bit. You know, example, back to mortgage, there's a borrower that I'm working with right now that it was one of the first borrowers that I worked with as I got into mortgage. And we thought that we had them pre-qualified. I kind of jumped the gun on a few things because I was like, ooh, yes, somebody with a pulse that wants to borrow. Yay, I'm in mortgage. And we had to basically go back and say, you don't qualify. Sorry. And the girl got furious and, you know, screamed at me, hung up on me, sent mean texts afterwards. And I had to just go, okay, yes, I know you're angry. And the goal is still to get you in a house. Didn't hear from her. She completely ghosted me. And then about 2 weeks or so, maybe, she called me back. And, you know, told me, you know, it sucked to hear that information at the time. I was really upset. I had some time to think about it and you were right. And not that I wanted to be right. You know, I don't want to be right. I just want to get someone into a home. But, and they've been doing the hard work of getting themselves where they need to be, fixing the credit, you know, saving up money, all the things. And we're trying to get them in a house. And you know, I want so badly to get them where they need to be. But she needed to take the time to work through her emotions And sometimes in whatever the situation is, whatever the scenario is you're describing, Gina, like the people have to, people don't want to take ownership sometimes of their own shit. So if somebody fucked up, then it might take them a minute to like really sit back and realize that was okay. I actually have a role to play in this issue.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt this amazing episode, but I just wanted to give a really quick shout out to Dermavogue, who is our fantastic sponsor. Dr. Turek and his staff over at Dermavogue.com help Gina and I to look and feel our very best. So if you're curious about little magical secrets that Gina and I use to look so amazing and also to feel amazing and navigate this difficult world, check them out, Dermavogue.com. Thanks, Dermavogue.
And I think people have good intentions. I think this person who came to me had good intentions. And even when the two of them ended up in a situation at a business event together and the one called the other one out and then called me to say, hey, I called her out. And I was like, oh my God. You know, her response was, well, she's my girlfriend. You know, she's a friend of mine. And I felt like she needed to know. And so she had good intentions, but she hadn't done all the homework. And then this created some intense stress and tension for me that required an emergency visit to therapy. You know, and you know, it's like, think it out. If you're going to approach someone with something, think it out before you go and do it. And to your point, it's like, where are they coming from in that moment? How are they feeling? What are they dealing with? You know, you and I have had these moments. And one of these things that I've learned about myself through therapy, and I'm a huge believer in therapy, just because my friends don't want to hear my shit every week. So I pay someone to listen to my shit, right? One thing I've learned about myself is that while as ballsy and confident and resilient and pushy I can be, when it comes to the people closest to me, I clam up, which is weird because I'm more concerned about upsetting you, Rachel, or upsetting another friend of mine because you're close to me. And I'm afraid that if I respond, let's say react, because there's a difference between reacting and responding. If I react from my emotions, I don't want to upset you.
I never right? get I don't, upset. I never get upset, Gina. I don't know what you mean.
You're always so docile with
so
me.
So level-headed.
And so what I end up doing is I shut down. And for me, I need to shut down because I know that I can be reactive. So I need to shut down and process. So if you understand how people operate, okay, she needs to process. I'm going to back the fuck off. And I think I've even said to you, back the fuck off. I don't know. I may have. I've said it to other people, like, just give me some space because I can't think clearly right now.
Well, and actually in a lot of conversations and I've been in a few marriages where I wish I had this knowledge then that if you're in a situation where there's heated emotions, it's actually better to back off and say, hey, can we take a break and come back to this later?
Yeah.
So if you're in a difficult conversation that's getting emotionally charged to the point that there's actually not any progress being made, it's perfectly okay and actually advisable by my therapist to say, hey, do you mind if I take some time to get my emotions in check and then come back to this later? And I think that a lot of problems and fights and arguments can be better resolved if people would have the self-awareness to do that. But the fact of the matter is a lot of times, you know, especially if it's your spouse, or your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, that they know how to push your buttons and you want to win, you know, and it's your triggers are so raw and fresh and then it just becomes back and forth banter rather than, you know, take a break, step back and come back to it later because it's not going to just go away.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment you made because you want to win. I want to break that down for a second because it's not about you want to win and get the upper hand, I don't think. I think about any relationship I've had, whether it's husband, friends, whatever. It's the win is about I want you to love me. Right? And so the win is like if I'm coming to bring you something, it's because I love you. and I want you to love me back for loving you. Does that make sense? Like, you're bringing a piece of information to someone, let's just say on a personal basis, that, well, let's just say a marriage that isn't working, right? But the fights that break out in marriages, oh, have you seen the movie Marriage Story on Netflix?
Nope, haven't.
Oh my gosh. Hits home for anyone who's had a challenge in marriage. The fight scenes.
That means everyone.
Yeah, the fight scenes, like, you're like, it's gut-wrenching because we've all been in those, like, the verbal fight scenes. Hmm. And you sit back and you watch this. Oh, my God. Scarlett Johansson. Oh, my God. Anyway, all of those fights come from a place of, I just wanted you to love me. and so we're fighting over things because we got away from the original core of the relationship.
Yep. Ooh, I'm going to have to watch that.
Yeah, it's if you're in a good place in marriage, it's helpful. It's going to be fine. But yeah, if you're in a bad place in marriage, think about
it. Yeah.
You might want to wait to watch it.
Well, and then there's the and then there's the difficult conversations you have in parenthood. So, like, fighting with your children. If anybody has a teenager, you can probably relate that there's some difficult conversations that have to be had there too.
You've had some doozies.
I've had some doozies.
So I laugh every time you message me with guess what Roxy and I talked about.
So moving, are we okay to tangent to a funny, an uplifting, difficult conversation? So
yes, so, because I'm done. Let's talk about this because it's fun.
Oh gosh, you guys. So this will be the second time in my life that I'm like, I probably need to go ahead and start a website / program for parents to talk to their kids about sex, because I had hands down the most intense conversation of my entire existence, I think, with my daughter the other night. and I'll have to be careful about divulging too much for her, to protect her. But we talked about
She won't
everything.
Listen to this for like another 20 years.
Well, basically, it came down to, she asked me, have I had sex with my husband? And that's, I said, yes, I'm married to him. Well, and she was like, well, okay, so how often do you have sex with him? And I'm like, well, as often as possible. Like, you know. And
wait, how old is she?
Roxy is 11 of today.
All right. Okay.
And so then, when she realized, now I think backtracking, because I just actually spoke to her father this morning and told him about these conversations, which, you know, having difficult conversations with your ex-husband, that's a whole nother episode there. But so this was actually a good conversation. I had him laughing because I wanted him to know that we talked about this. But beforehand, she was in the bath and I was like sitting on the floor eating my healthy dinner of Pringles and Sun Chips. We were having like a girl party, and we were talking about some of the difficult things that her friends are going through with sexuality and this whole like transgender or pansexual, and, you know, and the conversation was that some of her friends can't, they basically have said they're never telling their parents anything ever again because their parents aren't willing to be accepting of what they're exploring, experiencing, and trying to understand, right? So then later, I think that opened up to her that she could start asking me these crazy sex questions. Gina, we went through what is a blowjob? How do you do it right? Like, what happens if with oral sex with girls? Like, what's a hoe? So we had to go in because I said, so have you kissed anybody yet? She's like, well, no. And she said, I said, well, are other girls in your class right now kissing boys? And she said, well, I think only the hoes are. So I had to go, oh, so let's talk about what a hoe is. Do you know what a hoe is? And she's like, no. So I had to explain to her like that a hoe is actually a slang term for a prostitute who actually sells herself for sex. So then now people kind of call it. And then going into like calling somebody.
A hoe gets paid. A hoe gets paid.
And so then, but yet in today's world, sometimes we call our friends our bitches. That's different than calling somebody a bitch. You know, like all of these things we're getting there. And then we're getting into, well, what is an orgasm? What does it feel like? Tell me about the first time. And so the point I'm getting at here is, if you're listening to this and you aren't comfortable talking to your kids about sex, you know this is a difficult conversation. And there was a moment right when this whole thing started that I was like, am I really going to go there? And it was literally a decision inside my head with myself that let's just be open and just tell her anything she wants to hear. I did draw the line about telling her about her father and mine sex life. I was like,
Did she ask?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I said, I'm not going to discuss that with you, Roxy. I will just say that that was not the reason that our marriage was bad. The sex part was not. And why we split up, you know. And I said, I'm not talking about your dad or any of his parts. Like, he deserves that kind of respect.
Could you imagine?
Oh, God.
Could you imagine? He would kill you.
He would. And it's also really disrespectful to do that. And so I just decided to be very open and explicit, because guess what? I went into, you know, we have talked many times about Regina Thomas Auer's book, Pussy, A Reclamation. And I started in on that. I said, look, you know, your girl parts, you need to be friends with them. You need to be comfortable with it. You need to be you want to treat yourself with respect, and you want all men to treat you and boys to treat you with respect. And I told her, you know, when it comes to sex, like, the boys don't know what to do. They have a, she's like, I was like, they're just going to like be there. She's like, they're going to have a boner. And I'm like, yes, the boys are going to have a boner, and they're going to know that they want to put that in there, and they don't really know what to do. And I said,
my God.
I mean, well, it's crazy, but they don't. And I said, Roxy, I told her about the first time I had sex. I told her about when my mom walked up to me the next morning. Somehow she knew I had had sex and handed me birth control. And I said, you know, I'd rather, Roxy, you, the first time that you have sex, I don't want you to feel like you're gonna get caught doing something bad. I want you to feel like you can come to me and talk to me and say, that was the worst thing that ever happened. It was terrible. What happened? You know, I'd rather that have that conversation, because I'd rather her be, know what is safe. So I want her to understand that she does not have to let a boy do things to her or a girl so that they will like her. She is allowed to call the shots on her own body. But mostly that just to have the conversation and so that she wouldn't have a bad experience. I said, look, sex is a great thing. Like, it's a great thing. It should be fun. It should feel good, you know, but you also have to understand that, you know, if you're not doing taking certain precautions, you can get pregnant or you can get something that you need to go to the doctor for, you know, but it's supposed to be a good experience. And I know, you know, nobody had this kind of explicit talk with me when I was a kid.
God, no.
You know, my parents definitely, it was more like, and I think there's a lot of parents out there, and if this is your belief, then that's fine. But I think the reality is your kid's going to go and want to have sex. They're 11 and they're talking about boners and blowjobs and hoes.
Oh, I remember being in sixth grade. I don't know why I have this flashback. Sixth grade, sitting at the library with three of my girlfriends. We're in Catholic school, and that's where I learned about a blowjob, at a library. And we were talking about it in sixth grade. So it's going to happen. So you have to, as a parent, be willing to have that difficult conversation. And I, like, kudos to you, because I think, you know, there's so much harm that can come to people mentally and emotionally from sex, even at our age, because of the emotions that get wrapped up. And for someone that young, I think if you can prepare them, gosh, I wish somebody would have prepared me, because
totally.
It comes down to self-worth too.
Yes. I was just thinking that.
And you don't know that as a kid, of self-worth, and you think that doing those things is going to get you more love,
right? And I was talking this morning with Roxy's dad about this whole conversation, and I said, "This is how children get in trouble with online predators." I think this is just my opinion. It's not a fact based on anything, but if you've got a kid that is curious about sexuality, and then suddenly you've got an adult that comes to the realization that they're dealing with a kid that doesn't really know what they're doing, that child is vulnerable to somebody, you know, convincing them to try some things that are, you know, I've seen some horrifying articles online about sexual predators, but my kid, you know, I have said her, and in my conversation last night, I set it up with her. I said, you're going to experiment with kids your age. It's just going to happen. And I'd rather you be prepared, and I'd rather you not feel like you have to do something to make somebody like you because you don't know what exactly it is to do, right? Because I know I'm totally guilty of many, many years of thinking that I just had to let the man do what he wanted so that he would love me or even like me. Or I had such lack of self-worth, as you mentioned, to your point, that I just wanted to be validated in some way that I was, you know, good. And even my first marriage, he was the perfect example that he told me I was beautiful. And that I needed so desperately somebody to tell me that I was beautiful and good and worthy. And what I told Roxy is, you know, you need to understand that you are good and beautiful and worthy without having to prove it through sex. Sex is something that's fun, but it's under your control. You are the goddess. Yeah. You are the gatekeeper. But sexual predators come into the situation because these kids, they want to talk about it to somebody. If suddenly somebody comes along and is willing to like go, hey, have you given a blowjob? Oh, you don't know what that is? I've seen this conversation, terrifying conversation, where somebody went in an experiment and like they pretended they were like 8-year-old girls on TikTok, right? Oh, and the predator comes along. Oh, well, I'd love to show you what, how to do. Oh, this is what you do. And da da da. I mean, it's just horrible. So my child, I have set her up that like, if it's between teenagers that you know, and you're kind of playing around with your sexuality and trying to figure it out and you're being safe, that's one thing. When an adult comes in and approaches you, please, please talk to me, because it's not okay for an adult to come at a young girl or any of your friends. And she was like, okay. And I just, you know, I don't know if parents have that conversation. Mostly they're like, oh my God, my child's not going on TikTok. My child's on TikTok, but guess what? Her TikTok account is attached to my phone number. So the only way you can private message on TikTok is if you enter a phone number, and it's my phone number on her account. So, you know, they're going to find it. They're going to find porn online. They're going to, even if you put parental controls, guess what? They're going to find it on their friend's phone. They're going to look at it. They're going to experiment, because guess what? You did too, Mr. and Mrs. Judging me right now out there.
Mic drop. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're going to find it. It's like, it's the takeaway, like in sales. If you take something away, then they want it more.
Right.
You can't afford me. Yeah. I'm going to take it away. Then they want you.
Yep. Unless you're a 43-year-old woman out there who never has had sex, and maybe, you know, props to the people that save themselves and have sex when they marry somebody. Because
Rachel, they're not listening to this.
That's
show.
Right. They're not. Yeah. But I definitely think, was that a difficult conversation with Roxy? Hell yes. But did I flip it and make it a fun conversation? Yes, it was fun. And the funny thing is, like, it was about 45 minutes of this, like, questions like you wouldn't believe. And then finally she's like,
I wish you could have recorded that for the future to play back.
Me too, because I know I made some good points, especially about valuing your girl parts, being okay with your own, the word pussy, you know, being comfortable with it. Because I've met 25-year-old women that don't even want to talk. They're like, ew, I just can't stand it. It's disgusting. And, you know, Regina Thomasauer addresses that so beautifully in her book. But, then, like, she was like, so when we go to Disney, can we ride so-and-so ride? And I was like, okay, good. We're done here.
Well, it's interesting. It's a little kind of topical right now. You know this person, Kathy Redwine. She, I'm producing, I'm executive producing her new podcast called Dealing and Feeling. And it's all about how to have challenging conversations with kids. And we recorded her first episode, and it was, you know, her intro episode was the show about, and it was interview style, and I interviewed her. And we really got into how so many parents avoid conversations. A, they avoid it because maybe they don't know how to have it, or there's some shame around it, or, you know, there's a variety of reasons why they're not having the conversations that are so crucial for kids today. I told her about Frieda Rothman, who's also been on our show, and how she's talked about the importance of sharing stories with kids, because kids are to a place of depression today and don't realize how good things really are compared to how bad they could be. So being able to share a story, I thought that was kind of interesting. So I decided to give a little plug to Dealing and Feeling, that's launching very soon as a tool for how can parents have conversations. I believe we're putting you on that show. You don't know that yet, but
I definitely want to be on that show, because she's been really great with my family. And I think really the overall, like looking back over this entire conversation we've had, Gina, that is to reframe what we consider a difficult conversation and realize that there's so much good that can actually come out of being brave enough to have the difficult conversation, being vulnerable. You know, I was vulnerable with Roxy about how just bad, ignorant I was when I first started in my own path of learning what sex was and to deal with that, and being a kid and being a woman and getting married and all these things. Like, you have to be willing to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to be open, and you just have to be willing to realize that there can be a good result from a bad situation.
Yeah, it's kind of my concept on failure in improv. Like, we train to fail, because then we're open to anything or able to get back up without it. It makes us more resilient and not worry so much. And again, thinking about difficult conversations in business, there's so many of those. To kind of like one more, you know, point to kind of close out the show, that whether you're in a situation, you know, selling is difficult conversations, because as the seller, you're going to get pushback and you don't know how to deal with the pushback. As the buyer, you're going to give pushback and you don't want to necessarily do that, because they might not love you anymore when you say no to them. And so it's difficult for the buyer. It's difficult for the seller. If you're in situations, that there was an article I read, and we'll post some links to some articles on how to have difficult conversations, because there's some good, like, here's the 10 ways to do it. There was a reference to like how to tell someone they have bad hygiene. Like, nobody wants to have that conversation. I've actually done training around it. How do you have that conversation about hygiene? Nobody wants to do that. But you also need to look at both sides. How is it? What are you learning about yourself when you bring a difficult conversation to someone? And what are you learning about yourself when you're receiving it? It's both parties are learning something, and both parties have some kind of emotional stake in it. It's my 2 cents. That's my 5 cents. This was like, I think this was a good conversation about conversations.
Hopefully there's some helpful tidbits in there. And we referenced several episodes that were previously recorded, and you can find those and all kinds of also fun free downloads at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com if you're already not there listening to this one.
Yeah, and hey, if you like our show, the best thing you could do, well, obviously the best thing you could do is give it a review, right? But
the second best.
You can go tell people about it. Go tell people about this show. Share it with them so that they then decide they want to be listening to it. So the best thing you can do is to go share this information, because really our show is about how you can be a woman your mother warned you about. Unless you're already one, that's cool. But how can you be a better woman your mother warned you about? And everyone's got a different definition on that. So spread the love on how you can have a better life surviving and thriving by being a woman your mother warned you about.
And where can people find you once again, Gina, if they want to reach out to you?
People want to reach out to me, they can find me at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com or ginatremarco.com, which all roads lead from there to everywhere. And you And you, Rachel?
You can find me all over social media as The Singing Lender. The Singing Lender, singinglender.com. And of course, again, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com. Thanks again to Derma Vogue for keeping me even more beautiful than I was born. We appreciate you guys.
Oh, and let's not forget, we appreciate Keith Walters, who's not here today, but we would not be here today without him either. So we miss you, Keith. Sorry, we just had to go without doing a threesome today. With that being said, we got to go. So see you, Rachel.
Have a great day.
Bye, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, It doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof. Monkey, monkey.